This is the last Sunday in August, which means that it is our last Sunday exploring the theme of story in this community. What does it mean to be a people or a community of story? And so this morning, I want to offer you two more stories that I believe to be foundational, not just in everyday life, but for Unitarian Universalists. Now, for our newcomers, as Unitarian Universalists, we have 8 principles and 6 sources. Those 6 sources encourage us to find inspiration for our faith life in many, many different parts of the living world. Sometimes that's within traditional religious texts like the Hebrew or Christian Bibles, 2 traditions that are inherently connected to our tradition today and also part of our recent ancestry. Other times, it's poetry, or science, or even our own experiences. So the next piece I invite you to consider is the parable of the mustard seed from the Christian New Testament. But before you feel your feelings or let your doubts speak out loud, I invite you to listen as my colleague, the Reverend Nancy MacDonald Ladd, contextualizes this piece first. She says, "Like many rabbis before and after him, Jesus was a man who taught in parables. Everything was a story with him, and most of his parables eventually come around, by hook or by crook, to a description of what is variously transcribed in the gospel traditions as the kingdom of heaven or the kingdom of God. Within the context of the first century politics, the kingdom of heaven wasn't merely an otherworldly paradise, but a countercultural vision of what life might be like if the Jewish people could live out from under the oppressive thumb of the Roman Empire. The kingdom of heaven was the world as it could be, connected to and informed by the world as it really was. In one of the very best parables, Jesus evokes the kingdom of heaven by way of a mustard seed. This is how the Gospel of Luke tells it. Just these few words. The kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed that a man took and tossed in his garden. It grew and became a tree, and the birds of the sky roosted in its branches." This seems innocuous enough, MacDonald Ladd says. The parables often do at first glance. A mustard seed is usually understood in popular biblical interpretation to mean something infinitesimally small. Under that simple meaning, it would hold that a tiny thing became something huge, and the message of this parable would be so simple as to be cliché. From humble beginnings, grand things might arise. But anybody who has spent a good deal of time in the Near East knows that the mustard plant in Galilee is generally associated with something quite different from mere smallness. The mustard plant, in the context in which the story was first told, would have been thought of as a useful but tenacious weed that once planted spreads out and takes over all available space. As Pliny the Elder wrote around 77 CE, mustard grows entirely wild, though it is improved by being transplanted. But on the other hand, when it has once been sown, it is scarcely possible to get the place free of it, as the seed, when it falls, germinates at once. Jesus says the kingdom of heaven is like humble shrubbery. The man took and tossed into his garden on purpose a low-lying plant and somehow grows up into a mighty tree that brushes the sky. It is a dandelion that grows higher than the redwoods. Now, that image is absurd enough in and of itself, but that's not all. Not only is the kingdom of heaven like the massive skyscraper of a shrubbery, but all the birds of the sky in that holy kingdom, all those weird birds who have no place else to go, come and make their home there. The kingdom of heaven is tenacious, ever unfolding, and more than a little bit strange. Those who make a home within it are odd ducks and outliers. A tenacious weed shall outgrow them all, and the strange birds will roost there, and everything you thought was sacred will be upended by the odd, imperfect things you have always overlooked. One more story. Here is the next foundational UU story for you, and this one comes from the experience of a colleague, the Reverend Rebecca Parker. She wrote, "In 1976, I began a cross-country road trip on my way to seminary. I traveled with a friend. We had time, so we decided to take back roads. One afternoon, the road passed through rural western Pennsylvania. Late in the day, we came down through hill country into a valley. It had been raining hard, and as we neared a small town, we noticed blinking yellow lights warning of danger. We saw fields covered in standing water and passed several side roads blocked off with signs saying, 'Road closed.' 'Looks like they've had a flood here,' she said. Coming into town, we crossed a bridge over a wide river. The water was high, muddy, flowing fast. Sandbags lined the roadway. 'Gosh,' we said, 'they must have had quite a bit of high water to contend with here. Looks like it was a major flood.' We headed out of town, following a winding country road, captivated by the evidence of all around us that there had been a dramatic flood. Then we rounded a bend, and in front of us, a sheet of water covered the roadway. The water was rising fast, like a huge silver balloon being inflated before our eyes. We stopped and started to turn the car around. The water was rising behind us as well. Suddenly, we realized the flood hadn't happened yesterday or last week. It was happening here and now. Dry ground was disappearing fast. We hurriedly clambered out of the car and scrambled to higher ground. Soaked to the bone, we huddled under a fir tree. No longer were we lodged in our familiar vehicle. The cold water of the storm poured down on us, baptizing us into the present, a present from which we had been insulated by both our car and our misjudgments about the country we were traveling through. Both of the stories I just offered are found in the text After the Good News, Faith Beyond Optimism, the book I've been leading a discussion on with 12 of our members and friends here this summer. I have a list of 8 or more foundational stories, which you can find in your upcoming Cross Currents newsletters, but I shared these with you today because last Thursday, when the book group met to discuss the chapters in which these stories are found, something rather beautiful happened, and heartbreaking, and healing. At first, it was just one person who made this happen, rather coyly, I think, like a sweet nod to some secret she had been keeping and could, here in the small circle of this book group, suggest. "As a strange bird," she said, prefacing the rest of her reflections. And wouldn't you know, soon others did the same. "As a strange bird," yes, "as a strange bird, me too." And so the stories came of times in which they just couldn't find their people or their place or their center. How at times, right here in their chosen community, this group of 12 individuals felt just outside the places of power, the inner circle, just outside of what is valued or normalized or deemed of worth. "As a strange bird," they smiled, but said in earnest. And there he was, ironic or something strange too, Jesus in the background as a cheerleader and a new version of an old story justifying their truths. Anxiety, depression, meanness, divorce, someone's kid voted for he who shall not be named, and another stopped talking to anyone years ago, fear of the world, fear of ourselves, and a want to be comforted and not always conflicted. On it goes for all, for all of us always, but we feel like strange birds. For we have dressed up that strangeness for the sake of community, congregation, and for some of us, faith. We have hidden ourselves away from each other and sometimes from ourselves, all the while joining our voices together in a hymn of hope and lighting candles for the same, but playing dress up rather than using this space to reveal the truth of our days. And so the truths become strange, or so we think, and farther and further we drift from the other, all the while sitting closer than plain seats in a thing we call sanctuary. How many of us spoke a brave word of vulnerability two Sundays ago when given the opportunity to anonymously share our suffering, our yearning on that small piece of paper I handed out? And how many of you were shocked, amazed, lifted, grounded in receiving someone else's, in coming to discover that you were not alone in your worry, your heartache, your challenges, and hopes? Those were my Monday emails 2 weeks ago, one after the other. Kim, would you believe it? The paper I picked up echoed mine almost completely. Reverend, thank you. I can't stand for joys and sorrows, but I could do this. I need to do this. Out there, we are bombarded with rules of engagement, a correctness and respectability and way of being that sets us up to win or lose. But here in church, it was never meant to be like that. Church was always, is still meant to be countercultural. It was and is meant for us to flock together in our authenticity, in our imperfections, in our failures, for our growth, acknowledging each of our need for mercy. We make assumptions about this place and assumptions about what is safe, and then those things become real because even in a house of open-minded people, we are each holding just a piece. And the world is telling us the piece we have is right and is all, and it's hard to say, but I don't think that's what I've got over here. Anyone else holding something big and flappy like a fan instead of that sturdy pillar they're talking about? I don't think you're feeling what I'm feeling. We make these assumptions and practice them into being. And then wouldn't you know it, we are driving ourselves into the dangerous waters of dislocation and isolation and loneliness, pointing out the things that threaten other people, never imagining how it might be on the verge of swallowing us up. As a strange bird, I hope we can find one another here. Whatever you want to call it, where the kingdom of heaven or the beloved community, that place and that thing and that feeling and that possibility that we believe happens here on this planet, in this aching world, in someone's life, if not ours, that will be known by the odd, imperfect things you have always overlooked. May it be so. May we practice it being so. And blessed be.